This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Drive's busting this day open.
Busting wide the hell open, ain't it?
And we're telling them to bring it back.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Cubley.
All right, welcome back into The Drive. And Clint, last Friday, we found out with the Texans that their coaching staff is completely filled out. And the only new element to the staff is Nick Caley, obviously the new offensive coordinator. And then old Jerry Skoplinski is going to be the new senior offensive assistant and passing game specialist for the team. So those are, he comes over for the Rams as well, but also was with the Patriots before that. He, however, did not go to John Carroll. So there is that. But those are the only two new voices in terms of coaching in the building for the offense, right?
Yeah.
As we know, Cole Popovich moved up as the assistant O-line coach to be the O-line coach, and everyone remains there in the positions they were in the last two seasons. And I'm just wondering for you, because we were trying to figure this out and understand it, but you've been around the game, and obviously you've played in the National Football League and understand how this thing goes. What do you completely make of it now that this is what they decided to go to? Really, to me, we'll see what Jerry does, but there's really one major move that's been changed, that's been made, and that is the OC, obviously. And I mean, from your aspect, to like, what does this mean for the scheme in the future? What does that mean? What is this? What are they saying about last year's offense and what they're looking at different? What does this signify to you that now we know the coaching staff virtually remains the same except for the OC?
Yeah, I think that it just they don't feel like this was a complete offensive rebuild situation, and it's just a shift of gears, and they're hiring guys that have the ability to use the same terminology that's in house. All of these guys have spent time in McVay's system, or were already here in this system, so I would imagine the terminology is going to be very, very similar. So as Nick Caley told us in his introductory press conference, he's looking forward to expanding the system. So I'd imagine it's going to stay the same. And then number two, so there's some familiarity with what they were already doing, which I think is really important, right? If you're not going to bring a guy in and completely blow it up and just give him the reins of the offense, then you got to move in a way that you're going to keep the players as comfortable as you possibly can. And number one, keeping the terminology, keeping the system as they see it the same, I think has been a priority, right? The other part of that is there is zero doubt about it. Zero doubt about it that this is a Nick Caserio move. These are all Nick Caserio moves.
Decision of the offense.
It would be. I'm gonna tell you this. It would be completely like foolish for somebody to try to tell you otherwise. If you had Nick Caserio in the building and you hire Nick Caley, a guy that was with the Patriots for the majority of his career, for an extended, the biggest span of his career, he was with the Patriots when Nick was there. You look at the Popovich kid, that's the O-line coach.
Yep, John Carroll.
The John Carroll, the bulk of a good chunk of his career, New England. You look at Skoplinski, the longest time he was in one place, and really when he was there, they had the most success was New England.
Yep.
Spent some time with the Raiders.
Went to the Rams,
passing game, you know, assistant or whatever you want to call it, senior assistant, whatever. It would be crazy for D'Amico Ryans or anybody in the organization to sit up there and act like this isn't Nick Caserio. This isn't like Nick doesn't have a heavy hand in what's going on. They're all of the experiences with Nick Caserio, right? So I think I only say all that to say that I've got to believe that keeping the familiarity with the team and keeping the players nice and comfortable with the terminology, and then the system needs to be massaged and molded to look more like what was going on in New England with Tom Brady. That is what all these moves tell me, is that Nick Caserio has experience with all these guys, feels great about what these guys bring to the table, and will have this collection of guys that have been added or retained are guys that will be able to make this system with the same terminology look more like what Tom was doing in New England. Period. Point blank. End of story. Those are the two things that this looks like. The McVay and Shanahan ties with some of these guys, or even the retention from guys from last year, the Bobby Slowick tie. Like, to me, that's all an effort to keep the same terminology in house, so that you don't have the whole team doesn't have to learn a whole new language.
So the thought is the system is probably going to be the same. So we should.
I would say the terminology is going to be the same. I think it's going to be a New England system.
So they'll have the same terminology.
Every offense has the same terminology. I'm sorry. Every offense has the same plays and concepts. They're just called something different. So with this, what you do is you ask a guy. So you ask a guy like Nick Caley, who's going to be calling plays, he's got to learn a new language. Just like Bobby Petrino, when he took the job at A&M with Jimbo Fisher there, Jimbo Fisher said, no, we're not changing terminology.
They taught Bill O'Brien the same.
You got to go, you got to, now, Bobby Petrino, you got to learn my terminology and apply it to your offense and whatever you want to do offensively. Just like that, you're taking a guy. The difference is Bobby had never been in Jimbo Fisher's offense, so it was completely new to Bobby. So Bobby had to burn the midnight oil just to try to learn the damn terminology. The difference here is Nick Caley has been in a system for a few years. Skoplinski's been in a system for a few years. Popovich has been in a system for a few years with this terminology, so it shouldn't be that big of a change.
Well, the perfect guys to be able to handle it, you would think, to execute what it looks like.
Yeah.
You're saying they want to do. They were both, all of them were all in New England. And they know exactly what their offense is, which is game plan, right? Which is week to week, but based off the opponent.
I want my quarterback to have more control. I want it week to week. I want to make all these changes, and I want to be more of an 11 personnel team. I think they're going to be more of an 11 personnel team instead of a 12 personnel team.
Let the people know 11, 12 difference.
One running back, one tight end, three wide receivers is what I think they're going to be in more, and instead of the one back, two tight ends, or even the 21 personnel where it's two backs, one tight end, where you're establishing a run that way. I think they're going to be more like Matthew Stafford's version of this offense. I think that would be some kind of cross between Matthew Stafford and Tom Brady, and I think both of them were heavy 11 personnel. If you were in 12, you had a super athletic tight end, then you had a true inline tight end. It wasn't 12 just to be 12, and those guys couldn't block a damn soul or create any separation in a pass game. Like, there's a method to the madness. So, look, if you're not going to – I put a bow on it by this. Like, all of these offensive moves to me, right, when DeMeco fired Bobby Slowick, you got one of two options, right? Do everything you can to retain the system that you have and also allow yourself to adjust accordingly to get better the way you think, or hire a Chip Kelly type guy that you're just going to hand the reins to. He changes the terminology. He changes everything. You start over from the ground up. Those are the two options. He obviously, really, I don't know how many options were out there for him to hire guys that he could hand the reins to. So they go the route of, hey, Nick's got experience with all these guys. Nick says they're all great coaches, and he's seen it firsthand.
Nick Caserio.
Yeah. Let's plug all these guys into our existing system, keep the terminology the same, and keep this thing rocking. I'm on record. I would have gone a different route. If I'm DeMeco Ryans, I want to hand the reins to somebody else and say, this is your offense. If you get it done, it's good. If not, I'm going to fire you too, right? But they go the route of plug and play with what you have. If you're going to go that route, this is the way to do it. I like what they're doing. I don't like them making this decision from jump, but once you make this decision, this is the best route to do it. You got guys that know the terminology, have been year, 2 years, 3 years in this terminology.
And now only two people have to learn it.
That's it.
Jerry and the OC, Nick Caleb.
Well,
learn the verbiage of what.
But they've already got the verbiage. The verbiage is McVay's. Like the McVay, Shanahan, now there may be some slight differences, but the verbiage should all be the same. Like if this is a true Bobby Petrino, Jimbo Fisher, you come in here and you've never heard my language and I want you to learn it and then teach all the, like, that's silly. But if you can lean into Nick Caley's multiple years of experience in McVay's system, and that terminology is I would imagine that the terminology is damn near the same.
So what Bobby Slowick and what Shanahan what they were doing
I would be willing to bet you it is damn near the same. And so now nobody's learning anything new. All you're doing is drawing from all these guys. Again, Nick Caley, Jerry Skoplinski, Cole Popovich. All you're doing, they all know the same language. Now those guys are pulling from the New England days and going, okay, let's take these concepts from Brady and New England days and let's plug them into our language over here with the Houston Texans, right? So if you're going to do it, this gives you the best chance to I think, execute this plan and put a good product on the field.
Yeah, text line coming through with a question to you, Clint. So do you think this is a good thing or not, the way they've gone about it?
If we're just talking offensive football, yes, I think it's a good thing. I don't think it's as good as, again, bringing in a guy that's got pelts on the walls and is going to do it his way, and it's his way or the highway, and y'all get the hell out of here. I would go a different route. But I do, if you're going to go the collaborative route where everybody's got their hand in the pot, everybody's stirring the pot, so to speak, from Nick Caserio to DeMeco Ryans and Nick Caley to whoever Skoplinski is and all these guys, then I think this is the best way to do it. I think if you're trying to melt two systems into one, this is about as good a game plan as you can have to do it. Nobody's learning anything completely new the way that they did this. All they would do is introduce, like when you look at it, Nick Caley goes about designing this offense now in more of an 11 personnel set instead of Beck in at fullback, or trying to make a tight end a fullback, or Dalton Schultz in at fullback, or whatever. Right? You look up and you got a three tight end set out there.
Juszczyk's thing is
you ain't got a Juszczyk. You ain't got a Juszczyk. You ain't got a Kittle. Let's spread this thing out and let's do something that looks a little different. You don't have those guys. Never had those guys. You don't have a Trent Williams. Don't have that guy. Never going to have that guy. Right? So you're better off doing what New England did. And how quickly can you get there with these guys? The quickest path is to use the same language. And every guy they hired knows that language to get them there. And we'll see if it works. Yeah, I don't know, man. We'll see.
I wonder, is this enough change? Is this enough? And clearly, as you started off by saying, I don't think they view it as needed. So that's where
I disagree with their approach. Like I think this is going to be a fun football team to watch. I think they're going to be again a 9 or 10 win team. I think the product's going to tell you that. I think they're going to be a playoff caliber team. I think they're going to be an outsider looking in. Where I believe if you reset some things and sign the right guys, you could potentially be a true, legit, like, put strike fear in the top teams if you wanted to. I don't think this move gets you there. I think this move confirms that you're going to be a 9 or 10 win team that can win a division again. If I had that's where I'm at.
With the moves they made.
I don't think Nick Caley, Jerry Skoplinski, and Cole Popovich go, hell yeah, Super Bowl or bust, boys. I don't see that. But I do like. Hey, Bobby Sloak didn't work out. I didn't like the way that they utilized players and Bobby utilized players. I didn't like the condensed formations all the time. I didn't like going, hey man, we're going to go three tight ends or two tight ends when you don't even have one that's worth a damn at that point in time. That's kind of trying to force things. So going a different route, I'm not mad at one bit.
No, they are. They have gone. It's weird, as you said. They've gone a different route, but there's so much that's the same. they've gone a different route, but then it's. Because that's my thing is, all right, if there's going to be an offense that is more game plan oriented, do they have enough of the guys that are going to be able to excel in that type of system?
Well, I think D'Amico is trying to keep his, and Nick are both trying to keep their, because they've got a great culture. They've got really good, what they feel is really good leadership. I think they feel like this could blossom into something, and instead of starting completely over, let's keep some of the building blocks in place and just get rid of the tyrant and see what we can do there.
Yep.
The tyrant being Bobby Sloak.
We've got Napoleon's gone.
Anybody else's fingers hurt?
That's a good one.
Little Bobby, old Napoleon, or what do we call him? Ohio.
Yeah.
Al from
Happy Al Gilmore.
From Happy Gilmore.
Now your back's gonna hurt because you just pulled landscaping duty.
Yeah, you did. You can have a nice warm glass of shut the hell up, Gerard.
You can like trouble me for a warm glass of shut the hell up.
What Bobby was saying.
You slid Gerard in there.
Hey, you will go to sleep, or I will put you to sleep.
You can have a nice glass.
We never saw it, man. We never saw it coming.
Shut the hell up, Bill Laser. That's what he said to them. Coming up.
Is Laser still in the building?
Yes. Everyone's still in the building.
Yeah, Laser and Blazer.
The only two new only changes are they've added Nick Caley and Jerry. They keep putting in these tough last names. Coming up, we're not the only ones, apparently, who believe there is some drama brewing. Somebody with a bigger voice than us believes it, too. We'll let you hear that coming up next.
Boston.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Shout out to my lovely wife. She had her a great night last night. She was just going. Just
oh, make was sure, that last night? Or Sunday? Night.
Just go hey. Girl.
Make sure Nicholas.
Sunday fun day, huh?
And make sure Nicholas just got a chance to sleep with mom almost last night.
Literally went to sleep with mom.
Yeah,
huh?
That's right. Shout out to the Gaines. Had us a good time last night. All right, we've been talking about this Bregman Endeavors drama, and apparently we are not alone in this thing. Alex Bregman, who went over, and by the way, I don't know if you all saw it. I finally saw him like in a game. It don't look right. Him in that uniform,
Bregman and Red Sox.
Nah, man. I think it could have been a Guardians jersey. It could have been a.
I don't know about that.
A Padre. I'm just saying it could have been a Padre jersey. I'm just saying any jersey, it wouldn't have looked right in there, but damn sure the Red Sox, that didn't look right. But Harold Reynolds, MLB Network, this is his thought of what's happening in Boston with Houston Astros legend Alex Bregman.
They got a problem. They got to figure it out.
Yeah.
Because you can't sit there and say, Bregman's going to play second, and he hasn't played there. You just don't. He's got to get the reps. Double plays. The last time he played second base, there were shifts. Rafi Devers is too young. He's too good of a defender, and the numbers are ugly, but he can still catch the ball.
And part of the problem, too, is what are you going to do with Casas then?
They got a problem. And I think they're better with Bregman at second than they are with Bregman at third.
You're talking about what you're going to do with Casas. Casas told you what y'all going to do. Casas said he's going to play second base and I'm playing first.
It's all coming together, boys.
No.
There's several layers here, Ron.
No.
When I heard, that's Harold Reynolds, right?
That's Harold. Yeah, that's Harold.
By the way, great, great raspy I still like to enjoy my downtime voice. I don't know if it's true.
There is no chance Harold does not enjoy himself.
Okay, just makes it like I will share
you some news off air.
I've heard about Harold. He's got a real "I got in that sauce last night" type of rasp to his voice. But nonetheless, I enjoy it. I appreciate it actually, Harold. So good work, Harold Reynolds. Probably 4 or 5 days ago, was hell-bent on no doubt about it. This is not going to be a problem. Bregman's going to play second, yada, yada, yada.
No.
Well, if you're not aware, Bregman started the third base in the spring training game that was on TV, I believe I saw. Did I just see highlights? I think it was on TV. Yeah. But nonetheless, Bregman hit a bomb, and it's in a park where I guess their park is designed to look like their home field. Boston, he hits a bomb over the green monster, and he played third base. And so
the first time out,
he plays third base and he rakes, right? And so there's just layers of this, man, to the point where Harold Reynolds has completely done a 180 to they got a problem. They got a problem. And he makes great sense, right? If Bregman is going to be their second baseman, then you would think that the Red Sox would be treating Bregman the same way the Astros are treating Altuve, yes, right? I mean, it would be, hey, he's going to get most of the work. It's like if you just wanted to avoid the drama, then Devers would have played third. This can't just be kind of a flippant, nah, Bregman's going to play third.
Well, to your point, has Bregman ever played second base in the majors?
No. According to the majors. And Harold Reynolds said it in that deal. He's never played second, and that was his point. He needs to play second if that's going to be the plan. The whole thing, right? Well, so clearly it looks like Bregman's going to play third base and Devers is probably going DH, or they're just stirring the pot to stir the pot, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I'm glad to see Boston doing it. I hope it blows up in their face. But nonetheless, that's one. Number two, Ron, you mentioned it. Casas, the kid at first base, right? Because here's the other thing that Harold Reynolds believes is that if Bregman plays third base, you know where Devers is going to play?
If he plays in the field first?
First base.
No.
So, Casas may be in a little bit of save my own ass mode, right? Cover your own ass. Like, he's going to be third base because my position needs to be pretty – I need to be pretty set over here at first base. So, look, it just seems like the Bregman-Devers drama is real and the organization doesn't give a damn what Rafael Devers thinks. Well, or Casas, for that matter.
We'll see.
He DH'd the second game, by the way.
Bregman. It does feel very Jerry Jones-esque in terms of, hey, let's not do things to put these fires out to try to at least – you know, kind of.
No, add the fuel to the fire, baby.
Like when Alex, when they came.
Devers said what? Watch this, Bregman. You go to third.
When they came together and said, "All right, Alex is going to have his first game. At least DH him. Like, don't make the first time you walk his ass out there. He waltzes himself out to third base.
You can't tell me, Ron. That's the thing, right? They're either dead set that he's going to play third. Or they're sending a message to Rafael Devers like, "Hey, boss, you ain't making the decision here." Like, there's no. That's the only way you can interpret it.
And to me, that's a hell of a way to
handle it.
I look at it like, listen, I can understand. Like, either way, like if you look at Devers, I can understand, and you're saying, "All right, man, this is our guy. All right, this is our dude. He's been our third baseman. We signed him for 11 years. This is our dude. We're gonna have him play third." I can even understand that, even though I know when you say to yourself, "Hey, the reigning Gold Glove winner at third base is on the team that you just brought over in Alex Bregman." But I can even understand that piece of it. But to do this and then not be sure about it, like, there should be an announcement right now. Like, the Red Sox should have an announcement with the plan right now of what they're going to do. So it just isn't like, I will at least give the Astros credit. I don't think it worked with Ryan Pressly, but it was very clear
from jump
what the deal was and where ones was going to play. If you want, which would also make sense, Alex Bregman, who won the Gold Glove at third base to play third base, makes sense.
Yeah,
but just do it. Don't like that boy. You think they even said anything to Rafael before they ran him out at third base? They just said, because even if you're going to do it, you're going to say, "Hey, man, someone should go over and say, 'Hey, Raf, hey, man, we just, hey, just letting him play around, letting him play first in a place that he's comfortable. Doesn't mean you think you're a third baseman. Or do you think they just ran Bregman out there and just looked to see what
I'd be had. I'd be willing to bet you, and based on the way these guys are talking, it doesn't sound like the organization has communicated with anybody. I mean, Casas was like way out of Casas league.
What was
saying what he said, right?
Yeah, he's out
of I mean, the way in which Devers said it really put the organization's feet to the fire. The only one that's handled it with any kind of like
is Alex.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I don't even know what I want to call it. It's not. I mean, just handled it the right way is Alex. Like he's the only one, and that doesn't surprise me.
The only person to handle it without trying to add more fuel to the fire, is Alex Brick.
Absolutely agreed.
Why? Because Alex,
including Cora, by the way.
Because why? Alex out there walking out there playing third base.
Is Braggy being ridiculous?
He knows what's going on. They signed his ass to play third base.
Out there, if I'd have walked out there with a, I'd have walked out there with a big ass smile on my face, and then and just looked at the bench and did the Jordan, just do the shrug,
look dead in the camera. Kind of,
third base,
go out there, hit a bomb, dead in the camera.
That's where they got me,
Boston.
That's where they got me. All right, coming up, who knew this was going to be the case with the Houston Rockets? I shouldn't be surprised, especially now, but I am still surprised that one of the number one things we have found out about this team is actually coming to pass. We'll discuss that coming up next.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almased. Almased is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almased. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Houston fans, I am so happy.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios,
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back into The Drive. Coming up an hour from now. An hour from now, we will head to West Palm Beach, talk to Sean Pendergast of Payne and Pendergast, as they are there all week. Adam Spillane as well down there. And they are giving us the latest in all of the news that's happening in spring training. And usually when they go, it seems like something happens. Something big happens. I don't know. Maybe we'll see. We'll get what they're hearing about the Nolan Arenado situation. Does something happen there? But we'll talk to those guys coming up an hour from now, 4:40 on The Drive. And we'll do that all week with Sean. So that'll be good to come through. All right. The Rockets, they returned to the court over the weekend from the All-Star break. And they played two games. They had a back-to-back there. They played Friday against the Timberwolves, which was a big game at the Toyota Center, as they were 2.5 behind the Rockets when that game played. They got a big win there. And then they traveled to Utah to play the Jazz, who I think a 13-win team coming into it, and they ended up losing that game to the Jazz. And so they're 1-1 so far out of the break. The thing, and we've talked about it a little bit here, but obviously it's very clear, is I don't know about you. It's not a surprise now because we've watched this, but I am a bit surprised of how valuable and how much impact that Fred VanVleet has on this team. It is clear. He got injured in the Brooklyn game, and they played 10 from that game, and they're 3-7. In that span that he's been out. And I think the big thing that jumps out is just consistency from the offense. Consistency in getting good shots, game in and game out. And if you look at their last two games, it's a clear example of it. They shot 48 threes in this game they lost to the Jazz. And then they're in the mid-20s and went to the line a lot more against the Timberwolves and won that game. They're just really up and down. And you can clearly see that he stabilizes them and gets them in much better offense consistently. And they need him back. It is I knew he was important, Clint, but I would think they can survive without him with the guys they have. But it is clear his impact is so missed.
Ron, when you couple this conversation about Fred VanVleet with Jabari Smith Jr., because I watched the entire Minnesota game and then kind of was in and out on the Jazz game. And against Minnesota, I don't know if it was the All-Star break, Ron, or the fact that Jabari Smith was back in the rotation. Now, he knocked down, I think he hit four threes, four or six or something from three. So, obviously, he was shooting it from long range. But just the way that the team played with Jabari Smith. And then when you back it up with your point here about Fred VanVleet, I've thought a lot about this morning. And I can't help but go back to what the one thing that we've kind of always come back to with the Rockets, and that is this team completely healthy with all their pieces, all of them, not that one's more important, but all of them healthy, they got a chance. With one of them out, the fact that they don't have that superstar that can just take over games and can command the floor and the team and the timeouts and the big moments, one of those guys, whether it's Jabari Smith, Fred VanVleet, whoever it is, when they miss them, man, they miss them sorely. It's blatantly obvious because it screws up the whole rotation. And not only do you not have that guy in clutch that you just surefire you know you're going to go to, but now you've got missing pieces throughout the game. Because your point about Fred VanVleet, it's from day one, the reason I liked the Rockets signing him was his ability to be inserted in the game in critical moments and command the floor.
Yeah, but I would have thought they could survive between Şengün and Green and Brooks to get better offense.
Yeah.
But it is clear,
I
man.
I thought they would have too.
Clear it could go. Like I said, those first, just go look at the box score in those two games. You can see, you could just see, like, damn, they're having trouble of just getting good shots against Utah.
Yeah.
It's been up and down from each game.
You look at, and again, it could be the All-Star break with the Minnesota game. I don't know. They look like two completely different teams from one night to the next.
And that's and I think Fred, especially defensively too, right? Cause that's what Udoka's been talking about. We've gotten away from our deal, and clearly that dude is like a coach on the floor for him. He is, and I don't know. I did not think his impact would be that large on this team. Like it almost feels like, and you don't want to see this happen. I do agree with you. You want everybody healthy. It does feel like if Fred was in and maybe Jalen Green was out, that this offense would be more consistent. They would run more consistent offense and get more consistent shots. And it literally is from, well, how is Jalen Green feeling? How is he feeling from this game? And, you know, is he going to take good shots from one game to another? Consistently, when the ball's in his hands more, it feels like this team is less consistent.
Well, but Ron, when I think the Jekyll and Hyde, thought here with this, like I'm watching the Rockets in that Minnesota game, and again, yes, Jabari hit some threes, but Jabari was super, had 9 rebounds. I mean, the talk coming into him was how, I believe it was the offensive end of the floor, the ability to rebound and just rebound as a whole with Jabari in the game is a game changer. You know how many rebounds Jabari Smith ended up with in the Utah game?
Probably none.
Two. You're right, though. He had none
I remember him. He was
Ron. He had none with. I think he was at a goose egg midway through the fourth. I mean, like, he was literally standing on the 3-point line waiting to get the ball kicked out to him. It was just a different approach to basketball. I'm not blaming it on Jabari Smith. I'm just saying, like, it was a whole different approach to the way they played Utah versus the way they played Minnesota, and it was one of those that. It seems like the Minnesota night. Now, obviously, it's easy to say because they won running away with it. They didn't run away with it, but they won. They were leading and won. Like, that's – they got to lean more towards that, right?
Well, yeah. You would think with Utah they would have as – now, I know, obviously, Minnesota had some injuries to guys like Rudy Gobert, who is the reigning defensive player of the year. But it just was – to me, it was just like – What is happening with the shot selection?
Yeah.
What? You shot 26 threes against Minnesota, and you're now banging out 48 or whatever. You went to the line almost 30 times against Minnesota. Instead, now you're in the teens and how many times you go to the line, and you're just firing up threes in the game. And it's got to be incredibly frustrating for Udoka, as you said, the Jekyll and Hyde feel of how they can go from game to game. And I do think it is fair to say Fred would be someone that would help.
No question.
That Jekyll and Hyde type of thing. Like, you can even see with Jabari, hey, this is, you missed 22 straight games. This is a second to a back-to-back. Yeah. Maybe we'll see how you are. But damn, man, it's just crazy. It, as you said, but it's like a completely different team that played.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at it. Tari Eason is critical. He was out that game too, not playing the backside of back to backs. I mean, but boy, when they're back to the original point, man, when they're whole, and again, they're not quite there with Fred VanVleet yet. But when he, Jabari Smith, the front end of a back to back where Tari Eason is playing, man, they look the part. When they're missing one or two of them pieces, boy, the wheels come off. Just look completely different.
You know who else looked the part?
Who's that?
See them Lakers?
Oh, I can't. I mean, I'm not a Laker fan, but it is going to be fun to watch them hunt.
Wow. Their performance against Denver Saturday night, and now they have pulled into a tie with the Rockets. The Lakers and the Rockets are tied for the fourth spot. By the way, both of them are only two games behind the Grizzly and the Denver Nuggets for the two spot. But the biggest thing was, do they got enough bigs? Like teams like even Houston with Şengün, and most definitely a team like Denver with the big fella Joker in there are going to just kill them. No. That did not happen. I don't think I've ever seen Joker have a worse game. I mean, he had a triple-double because of his greatness. He only shot the ball seven times at 12 points. Held him to 12 points in that game, and then Luka finally looked like Luka for the first time. And that three-headed monster of Luka, LeBron, and Reeves all impacting the game in multiple ways, all of them over 23 points, all of them over 5 assists in the game. And then Hachimura also was over 20 in the game. It is like that performance, yes, I don't think in a 7-game series they would do that to Joker. But I didn't even think they had any way possible to even play one game to where they befuddled Joker the way they did. That, to me, the Lakers, you after their performance, you got to look at them a little bit differently now. The way they held them to 100 points in Denver. 123-100. They had to – I mean, that was impressive.
Well, I'm with you that there's going to be some bad matchups with big men moving forward, especially in 7-game series. But I'm going to tell you, the Lakers are going to be a tough matchup for anybody. I mean, because like you said, like Luka, we know who Luka and LeBron are. Reeves was coming anyway, and now, I mean, he's going to get even better looks with Luka and LeBron on the floor. And so, I mean, he's the real deal.
And I heard Pat Beverly say this, former Rocket, that he is easily the best third option on a team in the league. And I think that's probably, if it's not true, because, I mean, I don't know what the hell has occurred with Paul George. We've just completely lost him. Mm-hmm. But if that is not true, like that, he's close to the top of
it,
right, what he could do. And it's just all three of them should be able to help each other because they can all take turns on having to carry the load of handling the ball. Right, like hey man, you be the playmaker this time. Yeah. Luka, you kinda hang up. You be the playmaker. And the size thing was it to me. But if they have the ability to make life hard on Joker like that, and he can't just dominate the game, then like they can play guys like Şengün. They can play other bigs that could give them problems because of their lack of bigs right there. By the way, Rob Pelinka, what an a-hole move. Rob Pelinka showed up Sunday in a suite at the Warriors-Mavericks game. Rob Pelinka's the GM of the Lakers. I don't know why Rob's at that game.
Rubbing it in the Mavs' face a bit.
Is that what he's doing? I don't know why he's in that game. All right, what you got coming up at the four?
All right, there is a all-time great, I would say first ballot Hall of Famer, that quarterback that could be on the move, looks to be on the move. We'll tell you who that is, and we'll talk a little bit about that next right here on Sports Radio 16.